98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
Maloney basically evaluates all of the topics, reads all of the stories that are out there, and actually reads some of your tweets to see what you care about, and then organizes the Rush Hour Reboot to give you that information factually, and then Wolf and I opine on the subjects. How about that? Go for it, Maloney.
So the Phoenix Suns' playoff hopes remain alive as they move to 7-0 in the bubble after beating the Sixers yesterday. So how would Devin Booker feel if they went 8-0 and still missed a play-in game?
That's life, man. Like you said, you know, we're controlling what we can control. That's the eight games that we play in. So, you know, I'm proud of my guys regardless. And I don't think there's going to be any sad faces around here, you know, whether we leave here in the playoffs or not. We've put the work in, and we've grown as a team. We've took tremendous strides that I think will build for us for continuing years to come.
Oh. So with one game left, do you think the Suns will make a play-in game? Or do you guys still think there's no chance?
Yeah, I doubt they're going to make the play-in game. I really do, ladies and gentlemen. But I can tell you right now, I really don't care. You listen to Devin Booker right there and what Devin Booker just said. Devin Booker is greatly encouraged. This team is growing. There's no doubt about it. They can take what they've done in Orlando and they can run with that next year. It's going to impact this team going into next season. I'm all jacked up on the Suns, and Devin Booker just articulated it.
It wasn't the Kawhi Leonard bounce against the 76ers, but did you see the Damian Lillard bounce yesterday? I watched the Portland game. He hit a deep three in which it hit the back of the iron and then bounced straight up in the air above the shot clock and fell in. That was three of his 61 points. And I'm thinking that bounce might have cost the Suns a playoff spot. As ridiculous as that is. I love what Devin Booker said, and I totally agree with him bubble-related. But once you have some time to think about it, I hope it sits in their crawl to think, we went 1-3 against Memphis and didn't show up for two of the games. We lost to the worst team the NBA has seen in years in Golden State in Christmas when we didn't care. When we thought, hey, we're better than them. We'll win by just putting our jerseys on. And that's why you're not in the playoffs. I hope that does something to them as they get ready for next year. And I hope it means as much to them as going 8-0. It should be equal. 8-0 shows us what we could have been. 0-2 in those, or 0-3 in those three games shows us what we chose to do.
You have a lot to say on the Suns.
I have a lot to say on everything, but I normally condense it to 20 seconds.
Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott made the announcement yesterday.
This was an extremely difficult and painful decision that we know will have important impacts on our student athletes, coaches, administrators, and our fans. And I know nothing that we can say will ease some of that disappointment, especially for some of our seniors.
So Herm Edwards joined you guys earlier this morning to give his thoughts on the postponement and the one question that still remains.
The most important thing is the hours they're going to give us now with the players.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm laughing at you guys because I tell you, you know, the schedule deal is real, man. And what do we do? You know, I'm almost at the mindset of maybe when September rolls around, basically going through a week of practice or walk through meetings and stuff like that against the opponent we would play and go through 12 games like that, go through 12 weeks of that.
Your reaction?
Honestly, I have a hard time seeing Herm Edwards not do something like that. I really do. He's going to lose it. I mean, this guy's energy that he has and his passion for the game. And yeah, you know what? I think that's a great idea. Why not just go ahead and use that as an opportunity to go through a game week and actually study an opponent and then play them and then just go ahead and go rogue?
I like his 2021 idea. I like playing, you know, preparing for the 2021 schedule during 2020. And go through each opponent, because I don't think a lot of coaches are going to retire or get fired when they don't play games in the next year. So you're going to go up against a lot of the same schemes. Now maybe players are going to graduate and the team will be different that way or something like that. But I kind of like that plan.
The Arizona Coyotes are gearing up to face the Colorado Avalanche this afternoon at 2:30 in the first round of the 2020 postseason. Does anybody else have their Coyotes jersey on except me?
No.
I do not have a Coyotes jersey on.
And you call yourself Yotes fans. But here's head coach Rick Tocchet.
You know, you're going in a situation like this that you, as an individual, you got to get yourself ready. You know, obviously the game plan is a team. You can rely on certain team stuff. But the maturity now is as an individual. How am I ready to play? How am I going to take the game plan into my game? There's just a lot of factors in when it comes to yourself.
Who do you think will score the first goal for the Coyotes this round?
Hi, DeMal. Who do I think? Clayton Keller. We'll just say Clayton Keller right now. How about that?
Clayton How about Keller. Brad Richardson shorthanded?
You know what, honestly,
wow,
right
that's
now,
a bold prediction.
I love what Tocchet said, though, right there again. Rick Tocchet is honestly, I listen to all the coaches in the world talk about their players and how to go about competing, and I love so much of the time what Rick Tocchet has to say. He is so nails. What he's saying is be responsible. You're personally responsible for your performance. He's so dead on right. You can't worry about the team. You can't worry about a unit. All you can do is worry about yourself because that ultimately is the only thing you can control.
Hopefully Darcy is still on fire. Colorado's a better team on paper, but the way Darcy's playing, they can beat anybody.
ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that the NBA has released guidelines on guests starting after the first round of the playoffs. Among them, players will be allowed to bring in family and, quote, established, long-standing personal friends, unquote, into
no!
the bubble.
No!
How would you define an established, long-standing personal friend?
Stop it!
If
Stop.
They win, okay, now, first of all, this shouldn't apply because it's not going to happen until after the first
okay,
round.
Okay, but Family's no, hold not- on. Would you consider her an established, long-standing personal friend? They did.
I would establish the family as a long-standing curse. That's the problem here. I mean, listen, we don't have to worry about this because think about the scenario, all right? The scenario would be Suns beat the Lakers in order for this to happen. So for a Kardashian crash to happen for the Phoenix Suns, they would have already had to get past the Lakers. I don't even think the Kardashians could bring us down if we get past the Lakers. So I'm okay. You know what? I'll back off. I'm okay with this. Kardashians can come in and visit Suns players because we would have already beaten the Lakers by that time. If we're good enough to do that, the Kardashians won't kill us.
What was that, Mel? It was long-standing personal friend. What was that?
Yeah.
Define
established,
that term.
Established, long-standing personal friend.
Established. Wow. I would love Adam Silver to give us a definition on that right there.
Here's the thing, though.
There's my first question to Adam Silver.
Wolf, you're not gonna like this, but we have to go here. There will be battles when players have to choose which girlfriend that they're bringing in.
Oh, no. Please.
There will be battles.
Please.
I mean, could you imagine that where you get one? You get to bring, well, I mean,
Stop.
The battles that would ensue. Wait, I haven't seen you in this much, and you bring her into the bubble? Come on.
My young Krug brothers.
I'm not saying they should.
Do the honorable thing. Please.
Oh, man.
I'm not saying Doug Lease is wrong, but do the honorable thing, my brothers.
Maloney, just for that, I need you to look something up. Does TMZ sell stock? Can I buy TMZ sports stock right before the first round of the playoffs ends? Because there's going to be some massive reporting going on by TMZ. And I won't support it on the show, but if I could use it to pay my kids' way through college, hey, that's not my fault. Coming up next, Suns are undefeated in the bubble. Booker, MVP of the bubble? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. MVPP. Who's your vote? Most valuable bubble player? Monty?
I'm sure he's got to be in the conversation for that. What we've been able to do and how he's played, you know, I would have to say he's certainly got to be in that conversation at the top of that list. And, you know, that's a good thing for him and for the organization.
He talking about campaign?
I think he's got a little campaign going right there. Devin Booker, MVP of the bubble. Everywhere you look, somebody's got an article about Suns being undefeated in the bubble, which is an unbelievable story. However, they might miss the playoffs, and obviously the main reason why they missed the playoffs would have everything to do with their record. It would have everything to do with some of the games they didn't show up for. It would have everything to do with a lack of focus in some of those moments. But if we're just looking at the bubble of why they wouldn't make the playoffs, the man's name is Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
That would be why they don't make the playoffs. And it's not them, because they've done everything they can to make the playoffs if they win on Thursday and don't go to the playoffs. And that's because of Damian Lillard has just been unbelievable.
Don't you think, Doug Lease, that this bubble experience has just encouraged Devin Booker to a point right now where I honestly believe he is not only getting better himself personally, but where he's excited about the possibilities for this franchise? Am I overreading this thing? There could be, and I'm willing to admit, I could be way out of line on this one, Basin O'Neill. I could. I am the eternal optimist. There's no doubt about that. But when you listen to Devin Booker speak, and why wouldn't he be encouraged? Why would he look around and see some of these young guys getting better, like Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, right? These young guys that are growing before his very eyes. He can look around and see NBA veterans on the floor that are playing well, too, and Ricky Rubio and Saric, even Frank the Tank. I don't know how he's not encouraged based on this experience right here. And you know what I love about it? If you listen to Monty Williams, you can hear Monty Williams, the glee in his voice, talking about this team and what they've accomplished down in Orlando. And that tells me they're on the same page.
Remember when this thing started, you know, we had our competition things that we wanted to see worked out. But really the number one thing about this bubble experience has been for James Jones to figure out, in a coronavirus world, who should we be bringing back? I mean, there are so many questions of salary cap wise. Where should you go with this team? And now when you see them go 7-0, the only negative of the bubble has been you didn't get DeAndre Ayton like you wanted to.
Yes.
DeAndre Ayton had one really, really good game. He had a couple other games where he was okay or showed a strong flash. And his last two games have been absolutely pointless. I mean, just worthless as it relates to his development, where you seriously question whether he'll ever get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that being your only negative, granted, that's as huge of a negative as you get, because it's one of the reasons why you're there. But this organization does seem like, for the first time, it has direction. Now, what can you do about it? It's going to be hard to judge James Jones this offseason. It really will be. How are people really going to be moving a lot? Are franchises going to have money to spend when they look at the financial losses they've suffered? Do they even know if there's fans coming next year when they get into the building? So that affects all financial decisions. But at least with Devin Booker, I think he's going to believe in Phoenix. And now it's justified reasonably.
So much of the time, people will tell you that in a truncated, shortened season, right, the team that has got the most talent actually is going to win. I'm not saying that's what's going on with the Phoenix Suns, because they have played some teams where those teams have sat a lot of really, really good players, mm-hmm, or held them out of the game, right? But I guess what I'm saying is I think the Suns believe what's happening right now. I think that's the important thing. I know it's the important thing to note here, because that's the only way you're going to grow in confidence, is if you really believe what you're seeing, believe what you're doing. I know that when they played the Clippers, when they played the Mavs the first time, when they played the Pacers, hey, listen, they were playing playoff caliber teams, as we all know, especially the Clippers, how good they are. It's not like they didn't have Kawhi Leonard out there. It's not like they didn't have Paul George out there. It wasn't like they weren't trying to actually beat the Suns. The Suns won that game. It's stuff like that, that once again, building blocks, baby steps that you can actually take as an organization. And you played a cut from Devin Booker earlier this morning that I got to tell you, I was like, yeah! Because you could hear it in his voice, whether they get into the postseason or not. Something's happened to the perspective of Devin Booker. If you listen to him, that cut was really, really profound to me.
I'm wondering, and I did hear you, but it'll take me too long to find it. I'm wondering, what is this organization? They'll never answer this question, but what does this organization now feel about Kelly Oubre?
Yeah, you're right. Bing, ding, 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 ding.
I mean, do they look at this and say, now think about how much better we can be with him?
Yeah.
And therefore, there's a lot going on there? Or are they thinking, we went 8-0 without you, and look at all these guys that fought in the bubble, and then there's you? And, boy, both are justified, aren't they?
Boy, I wonder about that. I really do, Douglas. I wish I knew, because you know I love Kelly Oubre Jr. I absolutely – and I know you love him as well. I mean, as a player, just watching him, the stuff that he brings to the floor, the toughness is what I think is the intangible that nobody really talks enough about, the toughness of Kelly Oubre Jr. That's why, if in fact he sat out because he was worried about his contract, and only he knows whether he sat out because he was worried about his contract or not. Only he really knows when it's him and the pillow at night at 2:30 in the morning as to whether or not he sat out when he could have actually played, but he was worried about his contract. But if he was, man, that's the biggest bummer to me that you could possibly imagine. I'd move him. If I knew that, if I were James Jones and I knew that's what he did, man, I'm moving him.
Yeah, I think you have to. Then the question becomes, does anybody want him? And I know everybody likes what they've seen from Kelly Oubre in the offseason, in his rebirth since he left Washington. But, again, you're picking up a contract for a guy that either wasn't healthy enough to play, couldn't get healthy in a four-month span of no basketball.
It's a meniscus.
I mean, either way, look at Kelly Oubre's decision here. Either he couldn't get his knee healthy with a meniscus in 4 months to play, or he decided to protect himself over team because he didn't believe in his teammates, or he didn't think it mattered, or he didn't care about his teammates and didn't want to play. Either way, is that a guy you want?
Man.
Kelly Oubre could not have missed an opportunity bigger than he just did. Coming up next, what kind of missed opportunities are there for the Sun Devils? Does Herm Edwards actually agree with the decision to postpone the college football season that the Pac-12 made? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Wolf Bear and Maloney are live in the Auction Community Studios. Paul and I, opposite ends of the earth, kind of like where Scott Frost and the Big Ten are right now, at opposite ends of the earth, because there's a lot of news that just broke that you kind of need to know about. And one thing that the Big 12 has to clarify for me, number one, Herm Edwards, head coach, Arizona State, earlier this morning, do you agree with the decision of the Pac-12 to not play fall sports, and specifically football?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm always going to weigh with the medical people.
So they're out. Pac-12 is out. Big Ten is out. Well, Big 12 just made an announcement, guys. The Big 12 is going to play. And here's what you have to answer this for me. And I know I'm going to alienate a lot of people here. A lot of people aren't going to like what I have to say, but I have to ask this question.
Aren't they releasing a schedule today?
They already have, yes.
They already have, okay.
So they've released a schedule, and they are going with I believe they're going to go with I thought it was going to be a plus one model that you could play a team outside your conference. But as I look at it, that's not true. They're going conference only. As I look at their schedule that they've released, here is the thing that I don't understand. Bob Bowlesby has made an announcement that says we are playing. They're going to test three times a week in the contact sports. Okay. Here are the contact sports: football, soccer, volleyball.
Okay.
Can I ask you both a question?
And
I've only played volleyball in the backyard while drinking. What is volleyball a contact? Are we talking about because you run into each other and you contact your own teammate as you're both going for a dig? When has volleyball constituted a contact sport? Somebody tweet me and explain to me how volleyball is a contact sport, unless you're including when you contact each other. Because I've never seen a girl run across the net and tackle anybody.
Well, Paula, you were all state, weren't you?
I didn't know you certainly can't group or classify volleyball with full contact, full go football.
So, I just wanted to know. They're going to test three times a week in the contact sports of football, soccer, and volleyball.
Unless they're defining contact as you make contact with a ball, be it a soccer ball,
true.
A volleyball, a football. I have no idea. Maybe that's how they define contact.
You know
now,
what I am
to actually get specific,
at.
Though, this is huge because you now have the Pac-12 and Big Ten rogue and the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 all saying, here we go. We're going to keep going. Now, the Big 12 also announced unbelievably difficult protocols to get back on the field once you test positive. So with the new conditions or the new education about some heart issues that could develop by coming back with COVID, they're going to spend a ton of money on studying the heart of an athlete that is trying to come back from COVID before they let them back on the field. So it does sound like one positive test, you might be gone for a long time in Big 12 football. But that's where we are. Nebraska Wolf is awfully close to the Big 12. Awfully close right there.
I think it's stunning right now because I'm looking at a headline that says Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby shocked by Nebraska's intentions. Right? I am shocked that Bob Bowlesby is actually going forward. The commissioner of the Big 12 is actually going forward with a plan of playing football, because if you listen to all of his comments, and I mean all of his comments, over the past few months, boy, they were not boding well for football in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's shocking is how you can have such a disparity in college football. How can two of the Power Five conferences declare, no, it's not safe. The health and well-being and welfare of our athletes is first and foremost to the student-athletes. Hence, we are not playing football. It is a non-starter. We're done until at least 2021. And then the three other conferences are deciding to proceed and go forward. How can that
I can
be?
Answer
how
that question they... very easily, Paul. Which of the five power conferences? Let's just throw out an area. Let's say South Carolina. And let's go from South Carolina to Texas. Which three of the five conferences are concentrated between South Carolina and Texas? And which two are not? That's why they're playing football.
And I know the passion is such, Doug, and you would know better than anyone. You live down there and you covered it. I get that. I'm just saying, how can the legal interpretation and the lawyers and the liability allow for three of the five conferences to proceed and go forward, and the other two
even Southern doctors think it's safer. Right. The Northern doctors do.
I mean, between the medical and the legal sides of things, how can there be such a disparity? Because you know the coaches and the ADs and the fan bases, obviously. Okay, I'm dismissing them because they're obviously there's no sanity there. But when it comes to people who should not have a vested interest, that are just looking at the science and the data, how can you get two totally different interpretations from the legal and medical side that would result in such a fracture in college football?
Man, I cannot get over Bob Bowlesby doing this, because once again, go back and look at some of the comments made by Bob Bowlesby throughout this entire pandemic. And I would have thought the Big 12 would have been the first conference to say we're out. the first. The fact that it was the Big Ten is still a little shocking to me. It really is, right? Even over the Pac-12.
Paul, you have been talking about a lot of whether or not a World Series champion is legitimate in a 60-game season. There's the question of, okay, what about basketball and hockey when they've only had basically a 60-game season or so other than having their 82-game season? Let me be the first one to say, I'm sad that Ohio State is not involved. I'm sad that Oregon is not involved. But this is a legitimate college football champion. If you're giving me Oklahoma, all of the SEC, and Clemson, and they're playing, that's really all I need. Because do I really lose out? Yeah, a little, without an Ohio State, without an Oregon. But if I'm only losing two schools that really had a chance at winning, and I get the whole SEC, it's here you go. The Rose Bowl is going to be the weirdest game ever. They could legitimately play the Rose Bowl in April because the Big Ten Pac-12 champion will be crowned in late March. You could have an off day in the NCAA basketball tournament and throw in a Rose Bowl because the Big Ten and Pac-12, they won't have a place to send their champions.
Well, I'm with you. If this college football season was missing the SEC, it's not legit.
Yeah.
If this college football season was missing Clemson and Trevor Lawrence, not legit. Absolutely. Now, Ohio State and Justin Fields,
that hurts.
Yeah, but here's the, you know what else? After listening to you guys with Herm, you know where I'm sad? Is we won't get to see this ASU offense this year.
Mm. Yeah.
Herm's comments about how Jaden Daniels looks in the newfangled offense, in the new scheme, and what they've seen so far in limited action and how it looks to a defensive guy like Herm Edwards and how it's raised both his eyebrows, man, that was an intriguing comment about what's coming.
You know what's really interesting about it as well, guys, is the NCAA. Where is the NCAA in all this?
They don't have any power compared to
right?
conference presidents.
Exactly.
Conference commissioners, I mean.
It just seems so odd, right, that they're so in the background on all of this.
And in every other sport, they're in charge. But in football, the thing that drives everything, they don't have anything to do with this. It really is embarrassing. It shows you how weak their president is and how sorely needed a college football commissioner is needed over everybody.
Think of how badly this could track for a Larry Scott and a Kevin Warren. If the other three Power 5 conferences pull this off,
yeah.
Yes.
And they have an entire college football season through the entirety of fall, and they crown a champion, and they go to their playoffs, however it's configured, and it's a double thumbs up. If they pull all this off, and the Pac-12 and Big Ten are sitting on the sidelines,
Paul,
honestly,
it
might cost Larry Scott his job.
If I can add to your point, Scott Frost and Jim Harbaugh are adamantly against the decisions of their conference commissioner. Do you think those two are quiet people? If the SEC, Big 12, and ACC pull this off and they're successful, do you think Jim Harbaugh is going to be quiet about this?
I mean,
boy, I would love to hear an interview with Harbaugh if, in fact, they do pull that off.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
No. Coming up next, Ami Elsaadeh.
Pants!
Diamondbacks assistant general manager going to join us. And we got a question. Should Ginkle go back to how he was throwing before? It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
In Wolf Mornings, on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks Baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
Ami Elsaadeh is joining us, D-backs assistant general manager. Amiel, good morning. How you feeling? It's so much better than it was last week after being able to take two of three from Houston, but I just did not see the Padres being a better team than us, and they are right now. How are you feeling right now, Amiel?
Yeah, well, good to finally talk to you guys again. I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, I think obviously it's been an up and down season, and like you said, the Padres have been playing pretty well, and we've obviously had seven games against them early on, but guys came out swinging the bats early on in Colorado and fought back last night in the ninth inning. So, there's some positives to look at. And, obviously Gallen last night, pretty optimistic about that. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Amiel, what has been the biggest letdown from your perspective? Is it the rotation? Is it the lineup, the hitting right? Is it the bullpen? What has been the biggest letdown from your perspective?
Yeah, I think just not being able to string together, four or five wins at this point, or even three or four wins. I can't really pinpoint one thing that's been, I guess, what we would consider a letdown. I think just playing, good team baseball for three or four days in a row. We start to see it, and then we have a game where the bats don't come out, or we start to see it, and then we have a game and we don't pitch. So, it's more of a team thing, trying to get three or four games in a row. And to me, it's not an individual performance necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Amiel Sade joining Doug and Wolf. Amiel, I'm a terrible golfer. I love the game, but I'm a terrible golfer. And I'm even worse when I've taken a couple lessons and I'm in between swings, where you have, okay, was that my old swing or was that the new? And you have different things like that. I'm bringing this up because of Kevin Ginkle. His strange motion last year was highly effective. Now he's made some tweaks, and he doesn't seem to be the same pitcher. Is it, let's just be patient, this will all work out, or should we start considering going back to the old form of Kevin Ginkle, or would that screw it up even more?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think in general, a lot of people, whether it's hitters or pitchers, I think they make minor tweaks that sometimes you see and sometimes you don't. And I think Ginkle's might have been just so exaggerated that to the naked eye, everybody sees it. Look, I think, Ginkle is obviously the guy who's easy to pick on because he gave up some runs last night. But for me, it's probably, maybe it's not as much about mechanics and more about execution, just commanding the baseball. And I'm sure he's going to look at the video. He's going to work on everything that he needs to try to work on to get back to. And honestly, I don't know specifically what mechanical adjustments he's made, if any. But it's, his stuff's still there. It's really just trying to execute those pitches and not necessarily, leave them a little bit over the plate. And good hitters at the big leagues are gonna make you pay when you do that.
Amiel, as a talent evaluator, when you watch Robbie Ray pitch, what are your thoughts when you watch him pitch, and what are his issues in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think probably about 25 days ago, the last game of summer camp, I think it was televised, and Robbie looked as good as I've seen him in probably the last three or four years. And it wasn't just, because it was spring training, so to speak. He was dotting up his slider that had really good depth. His fastball was up to 95, 96, and he was commanding it. And I think we've seen, we haven't seen that same guy. About two starts ago against Houston, he was a much different guy than I think he was even two nights ago. His slider, his curveball are actually not that much different. His whole stuff is not that much different than where he was in 2017. Again, some of this is a portion of execution, commanding the baseball. Look, he's got more velocity now than he's had in the last couple years. There are times where he loses his breaking ball, and that's been hurting him. And then pitching in Colorado, at least the other night, you try to be too fine, and that could be a tough situation when you're not a true command guy. But Robbie still has the stuff, and he needs to probably, and I think he knows this. He needs to try to focus on the execution here as we move forward. Because I think the stuff is still there.
Amiel Sade, assistant GM, Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Doug and Wolf. Give us a Mad Bum update. How's he doing? When do you expect him back?
Yeah, so I think everybody saw Sunday. He had a back issue before the start, and really, I think in typical Mad Bum fashion, he wanted to get it out. Went back, got diagnosed with a mid-back strain. From everything I've heard, he's doing okay, but he's still kind of a little ways away. So I don't have any real updates for you other than You know, he's, you know, it was a back issue that really caused him to, I think, just not be able to get through his pitches the way he probably normally would.
And who's going to be the guy that then takes that spot?
It's a good question. You know, we've had some discussions. I think, you know, Torrey's still kind of talking through it a little bit. We don't definitely have an answer right now, but I think the one thing we do have are good options. You know, we have a handful of guys that are in our pen right now that have started and can provide depth. So I think when Torrey's ready, he'll probably announce it.
Who's been more impressive to you, Amiel, Merrill Kelly or Zach Gallen?
Oh, man, the toughest question of the day.
Pretty good, right? I mean.
That is. I mean, they've both been impressive. I mean, I honestly don't want to sit on the fence here, but they've been impressive in their own ways. I mean, Zach Gallen, what he did last night in Colorado against that lineup, and, you know, Torrey and I were talking about this last night. I mean, he ended up with, I think, 94 pitches, and seemed like the last couple of innings he was getting stronger. And in many ways, you're like, man, this is, you could almost continue to step on it with this guy. I mean, obviously you wouldn't in this situation, but, you know, he was extremely impressive. I mean, just navigating that lineup. And Merrill's been consistent the whole year. I mean, he's probably been our most consistent pitcher, and throws strikes, attacks, game plans. You know, his stuff is really good. You know, they're both, I mean, honestly, it's a tough decision. I don't think I could choose that.
I mean, I totally admit I could never have your job because of seasons like this, because I'm supposed to be a team guy, and I would be sitting there in my front office and I'd be saying, we did our job. These are talented people. Either what's going on here? Why are we just at this record? And I would be a bad person and I'd get fired. But I ask you, where's the front office level of frustration? Because I do believe you put together a good team, and I don't understand why it's so rare they play like it.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, you use a good word. It's a team game, and I think we're all accountable when the team doesn't play well. I don't think you could just finger point at a coach or a player. I think we're all accountable, and I'm not sure why this team hasn't gone on the run that we're talking about. I mean, we definitely still have a good chunk of season left. There's a lot of talent on the roster. There's some guys that are having frustrating seasons, and I know it's affecting them. But, you know, I think Torrey does such a good job of being patient and spending a lot of not only physical but emotional energy with these guys to kind of help them through, because, look, in a 162-game season, a small slump usually isn't magnified the way maybe it is in a 60-game season. And I think that sometimes these, you know, small slumps, bad starts, they start to add up in somebody's mind. And I think everybody gets frustrated. You know, we're frustrated that we're not winning games, just as much as the team. And I don't think we sit here and say, man, this is, this is this player's fault, or that player's fault, or this coach. Or I think we all look at each other and say, what did we do wrong? You know, but again, we still have a long season to go. You know, I believe Torrey believes that this team is going to come together and start to get on a run. And I know we don't have a ton of time, but I think these guys, they get the sense of urgency.
On that note, Amiel, if there was one guy that you could wave a magic wand to get going in the lineup, whom would that be?
Who would you say?
You know what? Eduardo Escobar.
Wolf, I know you said lineup. I'm still going Robbie Ray. If it's one person on the team,
Robbie Ray. No. I mean, in the lineup, once again, this guy was so good last year for us, and I just would love to see him actually get that groove going once again.
Okay, we answered. What about you, Amiel?
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, I think that Eduardo he's our team leader. He's so energetic. I think he works so hard. I mean, you know, it's early work. It's all day. This guy is trying his hardest to try to figure out what, you know, why he's not getting the results that he should be getting that he's had for his whole career for the most part. And I think, you know, you watch like the single last night in the ninth inning. I mean, you could see a bit of a sense of relief with Eduardo just to get that big hit. And,
yep.
But then when you look at the bench, I mean, everybody's cheering for him. Everybody feels the same way. And I think, he is definitely a piece to this puzzle that if we can get going, I think can really kickstart the offense consistency. So, I would agree with you. I mean, I think and the energy, you know, we don't see it's the smile that Eduardo brings every day that, we're kind of missing a little bit. So
if this is Amiel Sauden, assistant GM of the Diamondbacks, we were scolded by Torrey in the media if we use the word opener. So I won't say opener, but will Luke Weaver be pitching in the fifth inning today? What are the rules of Luke today?
That's up to Torrey and Hergy. I hope Luke's pitching in the fifth inning, put it that way. Okay. You know, it's Coors Field, so anything can happen.
Okay.
Amiel, thank you so much, buddy, for being so candid and always coming on here and being so doggone pleasant.
All right, yeah. Now let's get some wins. Here we go.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay,
thanks, Amiel.
Nice talking to you.
Assistant General Manager, Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Doug and Wolf. Coming up next, how can the Suns actually do it? How can they get to the playoffs? It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.